Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Make Sense of AI and What It Will Mean for Your Lab. The presenter is Stacia Sump, Global Product Director of AI and Data Sciences, Clinisys, Tucson, Arizona.
All right, well, thanks for coming. We'll go ahead and dive in. My name is Stacia Sump, and I head up analytics and AI for our portfolio of products at Clinisys. And there's a number of folks in the audience from our team as well. I'm just going to give a quick shout out. So we've got the sales folks in the back. If you're interested, Samir and Kelly, please talk to them. Eric heads up our scientific limbs for our Clinisys product, and Chad heads up healthcare. So feel free to reach out to any of us if there's ideas, thoughts, questions that you have. Carol will be in here shortly. She's currently directing traffic. So my goal for the session today, good morning, is to sorry, I feel like the teacher calling you out. I didn't mean to do that. My goal is really to share with you kind of an introduction to artificial intelligence and to brainstorm around how we might use this in the laboratory, how we are using it at Clinisys, perhaps learn something from you, perhaps you can learn from each other. Happy to make it a conversation. So these are the items I intend to talk about. This podium is in such a weird place, so forgive me for like strolling around, pivoting. I'm going to start with an evolution of AI. You know, how did we get to where we are today? What are some of the challenges in the lab? Not because you don't know what your challenges are, but rather to set us up for what are the potential applications of the technology as solutions for those challenges, which is the next point here, Gen AI powered potential with the LIS. Some challenges and considerations as you head on this journey, and what we are doing, where we are at Clinisys. So obviously I'm a vendor, and we sell LIS systems, LIMS systems, to different disciplines in the laboratory. And I'll share with you a little bit of our journey and how we're approaching the adoption of the technology, and then we'll have some Q&A. So here, this is the history lesson. So the main point of this slide is AI is not an overnight sensation, right? It's been decades in the making. And if you think about the work leading up to the actual coining of the term artificial intelligence in 1956, it is even predates, you know, it's almost 80 years in the making. So this has been worked on for a very long time, but the term was actually coined at a workshop in Dartmouth in 1956. It started out in the early days as rule-based systems. So there was a chatbot. Her name was Eliza. She was a computer that could speak like a human. So that's kind of the first. There's always, with these milestones, these different phases, there's some technological advancement, and then there's something in the public that generates interest and excitement. So that's where we started. Then we had kind of the second phase of expert systems, rule-based systems. This was Carnegie Mellon's, the coffee's still sinking in. I appreciate you guys being here because I am a night owl. I know how hard it is. I feel like an extra sense of responsibility to do a good job at 7:30 in the morning to make it worth your while getting up. But anyway, Carnegie Mellon developed this technology called R1, which was acquired by DEC, Digital Equipment Corporation. They launched it in their portfolio in 1982, and they used it to configure their computer systems to make sure that all the circuits and parts and whatever were working together correctly. And they actually were able to demonstrate they saved $40 million by the adoption of this AI technology. Then we move into the 90s. We hear the term machine learning. This is all based on neural networks. We have Deep Blue was IBM's computer, and it was able to beat the reigning world chess champion. His name was Garry Kasparov. I'm wearing contacts for the first time in a week because I have eye things. So if I say something different than what it looks like on the slide, that's my backstory why. But that was kind of the era of when we started really talking about machine learning as a terminology. And then we got into, and these are subsets, right? There's AI, and then there's machine learning is a subset. And then within AI, we have a subset called deep learning. And that's kind of where we've pivoted to most recently. Terms like natural language processing. IBM, again, had a computer. This time its name was Watson, and it won the game show Jeopardy. So bring us fast forward to today, large language models and Gen AI. So ChatGPT, unless you've been living under a rock, I'm sure you've all heard of ChatGPT. I'll show you actually a few examples so we can make it real this morning. And DALL-E, and you'll see that on some of these images here, DALL-E. So that's an image generator form of Gen AI. Some terminology to be familiar with. So first one, bias. You'll hear people say bias in the data. So what that means is your data set doesn't have diversity in it. So imagine you're a laboratory, community hospital, serving your local demographic, and just by the sheer nature of where it's located, there may be one particular race that's more popular than another. So your data set that you're collecting is not going to be as diverse as you would want it to be if you were doing some sort of clinical trial research. And the things to think about as you're using your data for analysis. ChatGPT, I'm going to show you a few examples here coming up, but it's all the buzz right now, right? It's why it sounds like AI is just something that came and overnight, and as I showed you, this has been decades in the making. Fine-tuning is when we're taking that data set and we're training it, we're making it available for a specific task. So a large language model is a neural network that has been trained, the data has been trained, and then it can be used for a number of different purposes. And so the two kind of go hand in hand. Gen AI is the technology that uses the language model. Hallucination is what happens when there is an answer. So it makes sense, but technically it's incorrect. So you'll hear people talk about hallucinations in the data. That's what they're referring to. A prompt is how you get the ChatGPT to give you an answer. And prompt engineering is actually like a new job description that companies are hiring for prompt engineers, people who know how to train these models to give the results that we're looking for. I always hesitate to say her name, Alexa, because I feel like she's going to talk to me. But if you talk to Alexa and she gives you a silly answer, right, it needs some training. So large language networks, LLMs. These are neural networks. They're trained on massive amounts of data, so internet data, used for understanding and generating human-like text. So, and I shared some of the examples from IBM. That goes hand in hand then with Gen AI, which is the technology that's trained on these LLMs and learns from examples. It continues to learn. That's what's different about Gen AI versus some of the older technologies. And it generates context. It doesn't have to be just text. It can also be images. I mentioned DALL-E earlier. And it can be music. And when I was setting up for this, I thought, okay, that's kind of fun. I'm going to take the music. So what you see here is an example. I've prompted it on the bottom. Is my mic okay, by the way? Is it? Okay, perfect. Should have asked that earlier. I trained it on the bottom, so I didn't train it, sorry. I prompted it. So I asked it a question down here. I said, write me a song about artificial intelligence. And it did. And it wrote me here's the little ditty it came up with on the right-hand side. My particular favorite is verse 2. It says, with each query you're evolving underneath the silicon skies, mirroring the world with those electric eyes, from the rhythms of the heartbeat to the language of the soul, you'll find the patterns hidden deep, making broken visions whole. So I thought, oh, well, that's kind of fun. So then I said, maybe I'll have my daughter, who just purchased a 100-year-old Steinway she's super excited about, I'll have her play this for me. So then I asked it, please show me the sheet music for this song so that I can play it on the piano. So I'm prompting, right? We're having a conversation. And so ChatGPT responds to me with, let's create a simple melody and a chord progression for the chorus of the song about artificial intelligence. So we're continuing the conversation. I didn't have to start over. He says, this will be suitable for playing on the piano. And it gives me, in the key of C major with a tempo of 120 beats per minute, the chords that I need to play the song. So then I thought, well, we're going to be in New Orleans. I should have told ChatGPT that I want the jazz genre, right? This is Jazz Fest week. So then I asked it again. Please put this in the jazz genre. That's hard to say. And then I realized it was way too late, and this was not at all what I was supposed to be doing. So I'll bring you back to the topic at hand, because it is kind of fun. And I'll tell you, you can get the advanced version of ChatGPT, which is version 4, for $20, right? So it's a minimal investment, and you can entertain yourself for a while as if you need something to distract yourself. So this is the OpenAI. So OpenAI launched ChatGPT in November of 2022. So they are the owners of the technology. On the top left is the URL for how you access it, but it's an easy Google search. And so I did a little test. I prompted through three different tools the same prompt, which is on the left here. I asked it, what is the normal reference range for a CBC laboratory test? And it gives me the answer. And I apologize, that's really little, so the point is maybe going to be missed here. But it gives me the white blood count, the red blood count, hemoglobin, et cetera. And I can see the range. So for white blood count, it's a 4,500 to 11,000 cells per microliter of blood. And then I asked the same question of Microsoft Copilot, which has adopted the OpenAI technology and is infusing it across the Microsoft portfolio of products. So this is Copilot. You can see the prompt at the top, same sentence. And over here on the left side, this is where you put the prompt. So it says, hi, see what's possible. And you can choose a conversation style, like be more creative or be more precise. I went in the middle here with balanced, and you can ask it a question. You can also upload text, you can upload files, you can have, but you have to be careful, and we'll get to this in the challenges, because whatever you put out there goes up there. So, don't put your financial statement up there and ask it how you're doing. So you type the sentence in there, and then it gives you the answer. It's here I got the same answer on the white blood count. It's a little bit different on the others. You would expect them to be the same because it's trained on the same OpenAI technology. But then I did it again with Google's version of the product, which is called Gemini, and there's the URL for how you get it. And my numbers are slightly different. So this all speaks to the training of the model, right? The data set that you're using and what's in there. And also highlights that you need a human still, because somebody has to say, yes, this is right or this is not right, and you're going to get different answers depending on where you go. So that's the terminology. Then getting into challenges. So we all know staffing is a challenge in the laboratory. Depending on the portion of the lab, what type of lab you work in, it can be a very manual process as well. We've got repetitive tasks. Our data, if we want to do data analysis, it's challenging because data lives in different systems. And it might be an apple in one system and an orange in another system. Things like patient name might be easy to resolve if it's spelled out patient in one system and PAT.NM in another system. You can kind of work through those things. But some harder ones are when the units of measure are different, right? Then we've got to do some math to figure that out. There are products that can help with this, AI products, that can help with the reconciliation. Getting the data, cleaning the data is often the hard part. And then the last point here is about the machines, the computers, can take in a lot more information and process and spit out results much faster than humans can. I think in one of the sessions yesterday, somebody gave the example, you know, during COVID, the models could see which way we were trending up or down long before the folks on the front line, although they probably felt it regardless of whether it was up or down. The point here is AI can ingest and absorb and process a lot more information than we as humans can, and they can do it much faster. So is anybody using AI today to automate in the laboratory? Has anybody adopted technology? Any examples you want to share? Not yet. Very new, right? So opportunity for, I'm just going to read through the first set of bullets on the top here. When it comes to data analysis and interpretation, I'm sure everyone's heard about digital pathology, right? Using algorithms to weed out non-cancerous cases so that you can draw the attention of the pathologist to those that are suspect of cancer, helping to prioritize work. Not that we may not eventually look at all of them, or maybe the converse is true, right? You look at all the ones that are negative first because we can set those aside and give the patient the answer. It's helping to quickly sort through that information. From a resource optimization standpoint, imagine you come in the morning and all of your orders have been evaluated. You know your staffing calendar, who's in, who's not in, how many reagents you've got in the fridge. How should I load my instrument for the day to process all the samples I need to process without having to continually swap out the bottles? The tools can help you do that if they can aggregate all of the different data sets together, all those different sources. Quality control, so things like flagging where are the most pervasive issues in my laboratory, right? Helping the lab director focus on the issues that are going to give them the biggest bang for the buck in terms of operational improvement initiatives. So if I know that I get this particular issue, you know, 85% of the time, and this issue only 1% of the time, I don't want to waste my time on the one that's 1%, unless that's a patient safety issue, right? Then that's a whole other thing, but we can help prioritize as well based on frequency or severity. And report generation. So can we give the pathologist, for example, a template based on the initial findings across not just one slide, but all of the slides in the folder. And I said folder, so that like dated me. Assume it's digital pathology, and there's no folder. The idea is allowing the diagnostician to focus on the analysis and the data and not the logistics of how do I do the report and struggling with, you know, cutting and pasting and things like that. So what does that do for us? Increases efficiency, increases the accuracy. Computers don't get tired. People do. At 9 a.m. versus 6 p.m., you know, the computer's going to process at the same level as it would in the morning. What does that do for your staff? It reduces stress, improves morale. So here's an example from a recent CAP article. So potential use of ChatGPT for report generation. So this is Dr. Glassy sharing about, you know, thinking how could we use this technology? And I invite you to check that out on CAP Today Online. So this was pulled in from that article online. All right, so now we get to the fun stuff. That's our day-to-day operational kind of tactical pieces. How can we use the technology to help us predict what's going to happen? You know, can I pull in my courier information, my tests for the day, my current instrument capacity, and already know at the start of my day that I'm not going to hit my SLAs for my turnaround time. I'm going to need to call in someone to come and help for a few hours so that we can get these out to the pathologist on time. You can tell I'm an AP person, right? So we can use advanced analytics to do that. We can predict, operationally. We can, once we get more comfortable with the technology, and now we're getting more risky with this next use case I'm about to mention, but diagnostically, evaluating a data set, looking at certain markers, predicting based on gaps in patient care, there's an issue here. This person is suspect for a disease or not. Let's get them in. That's where we really start to have impact on our communities. Large data sets, I mentioned earlier, right? This is a lot more than a human can handle. Looking at trends and patterns, the computer can see that and highlight that for us. When we're in the thick of it, in the weeds, it's not so easy to see those peaks and valleys. So some things to think about. There's a long list here without a lot of context behind it. So I was going to speak to each of these. So cost. This all in that evolution slide, as we saw the progression, this requires compute power. It requires storage. It requires investment. Like moving to the cloud enables a lot of this because you can scale. You can go up. You can go down. You don't have to make a commitment to a huge server that you may only need to do a short study, a trial. The cloud gives you that flexibility. Integration, we talked about some of the data challenges, like not to be underestimated how hard it is to get the different systems to talk to each other. I remember early in my career, I was a software engineer, an SAP software engineer for Hewlett-Packard. And if you're not familiar with SAP, it's a German company, and all of the code comments are written in German. So we don't have that problem so much in the U.S., right, because we tend to work locally. But in Europe, many different countries, 40 different countries, several different languages, like things you don't think about, trying to aggregate data that's in German and Spanish and English. So integration is a challenge. Change management, right, getting people to work in new systems in new ways that there's people have emotions. That needs to be managed. Keeping the data secure. So we talked a little bit about ChatGPT and what you upload, right? Same with your IP as a company. Some of these tools, some of that fun I had to have on my personal computer because it's blocked. You don't want employees loading information that's then getting trained and then it's publicly out there and available. So we've got to have proper procedures in place around security, data quality and integrity. Garbage in, garbage out. We need to make sure. And that's the cool thing about analytics is, dashboard, people say dashboards are dead. I don't believe. How many people are using dashboards? Anybody using dashboards? Please don't say they're dead. Somebody raise your hand. Okay. Anyway, the point is something as simple as a dashboard, which is analytics. AI is analytics, by the way. There's a progression of analytics from basic analytics, which are descriptive in nature and kind of looking backwards. How did I do, historically, all the way up to advanced analytics, including AI and predicting the future. So where was I going with that? Oh, data quality and integrity. So when you visualize your data through a dashboard, it becomes very evident how clean or dirty your data is because you might have, I was working with one customer and integrating across multiple sites, very large laboratory, and tissue type was one of the filters. And there were thousands of tissue types when we pulled them together from these different systems. And, part of it is left breast, right breast, locational that aren't necessarily what you're after because they've commingled two different data fields together into one. But that's the sort of thing that you have to work through as you're integrating the data and some of the challenges there. Regulatory compliance, you know, what do you need for an audit trail? What do you have to submit, report on? Do you have all of those data elements? Is that easy for you to do? I thought that said tax. It says bias. We talked about bias earlier. That's because I gave the tax example earlier. I'm waiting for my tax refund. privacy, IP, so privacy from a PHI, PPH, you know, if you've got patient data in there, you need to, you know, don't lift that up into the cloud if you don't have to. Try to scrub that out, and then you don't have to worry about it as much. GDPR, if you're working in Europe, your intellectual property as an organization, things to think about. Ethics, is the data being used as it should be used, right? This is within your organization, hopefully less of an issue as large data sets that are available publicly, but something that needs to be considered. So where is Clinisys at on this journey? So as a vendor, we are strengthening our muscles just like everybody else in this space, right? It's moving so fast and so new. The ChatGPT I mentioned launched November 2022. I mean, that was just 18 months ago. So this is moving at lightning speed. What you see here is a combination of things we're doing internally as well as externally. So we don't want to jump off the deep end and go into a space that may have consequence for the patient, right? We want to start small, start operationally, minimize our risk. And we're doing that internally with this kind of list over here. So we're using some of the AI tools to help generate code internally, to automate our testing. SDLC, if you're not familiar, this is a software development lifecycle. We're using for our internal productivity tools, the Microsoft suite and Copilot, and even this presentation. I mean, you may have seen some of the small disclaimers here that mention how the images were generated or the ChatGPT prompts that I'm using. So you can start to use this, and it improves your own productivity because you can do things faster. You can generate ideas. And then within the product, and I'll show you some examples here of how we're looking at infusing AI within our products that we already have to make them even more robust and to help users have more flexibility. Things like AI-powered analytics, creating dynamic dashboards on the fly, inserting insights into the workflow within our LIS so that we can draw attention to things that are perhaps drifting off course rather than the users having to go and proactively search for that information. So here's an example of our analytics product that sits on top of one of our LISs, well, multiple LISs, and aggregates information. So we're looking at pre-configured dashboards. This is built on Power BI, by the way. So we are a Microsoft shop. And there's the visual here. This is all predefined. We've got our case of specimen blocks and slides. How many have I completed? So this is basic analytics, right? How many did I do today? How many, on average, how many slides do I have per case, per block, et cetera? So I've got some metrics that are ready to go out of the box for our lab director and a number of filters. I can slice it and dice it a few ways. How many facilities do I want to look at? An individual facility if I've got multiple locations. Maybe I want to see it by case priority. Am I making more mistakes when I have rush cases? Or am I sending slides that aren't of the best quality to a certain pathologist? I want to look at that. What specimen type, et cetera. So an example of a dashboard that comes kind of out of the box, ready to go. Now, how can we take that and enhance it with AI? So we are exploring the capabilities that have been recently launched within Microsoft Power BI. This is an example of a natural language query. So here, apologize for the super small text. It says, ask a question about your data. And it has analyzed our data set. So it looks at our database and the structure of our database and says, based on the data that you have, like we've trained it, right, to say, this is, goes back to the training of the data, here are some suggestions for you of how you might analyze this data. Top pathologists by total cases, show me the total cases for last year. Show me total cases for last month, just to give the user some ideas to generate the thought process. So the user decides top case priorities by errors and show it to me, by the way, as a pie chart. I can choose what image I want. And this is what it gives me. It shows me the results. Here's my prompt and response again. This is my prompt. Here's my response. Showing results for 10 case priorities. Sorry, and I can't read the super little text, but you get the idea. And it's given me a little legend over here, routine rush priority. So not like super fancy or anything, but giving you some flexibility to really interact with the data in a different way. This is a feature that Microsoft calls Smart Narrative. So it is taking one of our charts, our images here, which happens to be, by the way, workflow efficiency. So the blue is showing me, am I meeting my turnaround time? Yes, I'm doing well. Or no, I've missed it. And that's based on workflow steps. So here, this is for an AP lab. We've got grossing, embedding, microtomy, assembly, et cetera. So these are the steps in my workflow. I know that I'm failing to get my slides assembled and out to the pathologist in time. Again, this terminology is going to change with digital pathology, but you get the idea. Glass slides, 45% of the time I'm failing to meet it. I want to know more about that. So I've applied here now. If I were interacting with my pre-configured dashboard, I could click on that. I could drill down. I could see the cases, and I could do that work, or I can have Microsoft using its AI capabilities tell me about it. So it's given me a summary here. So this is the smart narrative. Total task was on target, 1199 versus over target, 282 times. And microtomy is on target 25.6 times. So it just kind of summarizes what it's seeing in the chart here. I think of Amazon, right? And you, if you're like me, may spend hours looking at the reviews when you want to purchase something. And there's all these individual reviews, and there's the one stars and the five stars. And that takes some time, right? And you can tell I get distracted easily. You go down a rabbit hole, and all of a sudden it's an hour later. Or if you've been on Amazon lately, you can see the AI capabilities in there that kind of summarize all that for you, which is beautiful. That says, this on general, consumers like this product. However, they complain about the shipping speed, you know, whatever. So examples that we see in our day-to-day life everywhere. So we are excited about what AI can do for us, what we can do for our customers through our products, and really start to help transform healthcare. It's very ambitious, right? But if we can make it easier for the techs in the lab, techs are scarce. If we can make it easier, more efficient, more job satisfaction, et cetera, that's our goal. So, resources. Here are the next few slides will tell you where you can go to get more information. And, you know, obviously there's a lot out there. And get ChatGPT and ask it. Coursera, Salesforce.com, you know, it's just Google it. It's out there. I just mentioned, it's really fun. So get one of these tools. You can get the app on the App Store, right? Just look for Copilot. You can go to the website. I shared with you the prompt earlier. Play with it. Try it. There's free versions out there. If you want to do the imaging, DALL-E, I think it's $5. Like it's really minimal investment, so it's fun to play with. Maybe not on your work computer. Here are some potential use cases for application for healthcare. This is an article written by BCG and how AI will help transform and, you know, all the different use cases. So where do you start, right? That's a question we'll talk about in a second, right now. This is, you know, in Dr. Tuthill's panel discussion yesterday afternoon, there was an emphasis on starting with the business case. And that resonates with me tremendously as a product manager, right? But this is different because There's so much pressure to do AI. Like, what does that mean? Do AI? I'm sure everybody's being told we need to do something. What that something is, I don't know. So it is kind of a technology looking for a solution. And we can't say, I need this, whatever business case adopted through this technology, because we don't know what it can do until we learn what it can do. So it's a little bit of a balance. We need to partner business and technical teams together so that we learn what is possible and then vet out those ideas and how could we apply this? How, you know, what are those potential business cases that warrant investment? And start small, right? Identify what your pain points are. Where's that low-hanging fruit? Don't try to solve world hunger, right? Don't jump right into, we're going to use these algorithms to identify patients at risk for a certain disease if you haven't touched the technology at all. Like, get familiar on a less risky endeavor before you dive in. Get help. Start small. Pull in consultants. Look at partners, look at technology. A good source is Gartner. I attend the Data and Analytics Conference every year. There are hundreds of vendors at that event. And that's hard, right? It's hard to navigate because, one, you don't know if those vendors are going to be around tomorrow. Like, there's literally hundreds. I think there's several football fields full. They fill up two. I'll just send them a commercial for Gartner. But it is a great event if you're, you know, kind of want to roll your own and evaluate technologies. I think there's 14,000 people who attend, and they fill up two giant hotels. But it speaks to the space, right? Vendors come, they go. So one, you don't know how long they're going to be around. Two, it's hard to know how to categorize them, because when we're talking about AI, there's a whole set of businesses that are focused on the data ingestion piece and cleaning the data and data management. And then there's a whole nother set that focus on data visualization. And it truly can be overwhelming. So get some help to navigate this area. Think about the vendors that you partner with. And if you would like to partner with us, shout out again to my colleagues in the back, and we're happy to talk with you. So that is what I had to share. I think we've got maybe 10 minutes left if there's any questions.
Yes, so I do have a question. The examples that you gave, Stacia, were pretty much, in this particular case, using AI to do analytics of existing data, and it was very sophisticated. So what I'd be interested in is predictive models. For example, I'm having some issues with something. I would like AI to come and say, here are two or three different models in which we can improve this workflow, we can improve this process, and basically provide some feedback as to the efficacy and the cost and other issues with that with those models. To me, that would be extremely beneficial. I mean, what you showed was sophisticated, but in many respects, not all that different from business analytics today.
Sure.
From what I could tell.
Right.
So can you comment on your prediction for predictive models?
My prediction for predictive. Yes. So that is, so where we clinicists are at in our journey is we are in the process of, you'll hear from our CEO on main stage here shortly, but we are in the process of bringing together multiple different companies into one. This is going to be a little bit of a long-winded answer. So we are filling some gaps across our portfolio with our descriptive and diagnostic analytics, where it is, as you said, kind of looking back and providing those visualizations. And we are embarking on this journey of, okay, how can we now bring all of this data together into one platform and help project the future? And part of our value proposition is we are bringing together not only all of the different LISs that we have from these former companies into one ecosystem so that we can start to train and analyze this data, but also across multiple disciplines. So we're combining environmental LIMS systems with our healthcare systems, whether those are CP systems or AP systems, and start to look at bringing in third-party data outside, which is, I think, what we're going to need to become even more predictive. Like, if I want to know that I'm going to miss my turnaround times, I need to know when my samples are going to arrive in my lab. So maybe I've got, you know, I know it's a dream, but if we could see where the sample is from point of collection until it gets to the lab, maybe from UPS has that solution, Shadowbox? I can't remember. There's different solutions out there to track that information. If we could infuse that data in, we can look at our staffing capacity, we can look at our instrument capacity, and we need enough data, though, to be able to see that. We need to see the orders coming in, and we can do that through our EMR integration. We need to know how many instruments we have. We know how many we own in our laboratory, but it is a journey, and that those are the types of problems that we're looking at. Exactly to that point is, can I tell you how to optimize your IHC instrument so that you can meet your turnaround time? By the way, what is your turnaround time commitment? Like, I need to gather all of those data points. Any other questions or comments or anything you guys want to share with each other? Questions for your colleagues? Yes, sir.
Okay. At my hospital, I serve on a glycemic management team. And I'm the laboratory guy who gets the data for them on glucoses. And we look at everything from people with low glucose to people with high glucose. We do it by sex. We do it by what kind of specimen it was. We do all those things. Currently, it takes me about 3 hours to get that report done for 1 month because I have to get data from three different computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
So with AI, we put all that, all three of those computer systems put their data into that one place. Is that what I understand, or we have to do something else here?
So there are tools, and feel free anybody to if you've got firsthand experience. But in my reading of the literature, there are tools in the realm of master data management that focus on data ingestion and data quality. That, and if I had my technical partners here with me, and I was on the fence to try to deal with the logistics of that, but they could tell you the specific technologies that you can purchase that can help with that data ingestion. So we're an Azure shop. We use Synapse for our data ingestion. I don't know how much of that is done by the tools and how much of that is done by the humans, to be honest, in our system, in our company. But there are certainly AI vendors who focus on exactly that, like the scrubbing of the data. If you look at data quality, there's an acronym floating around in my head, but I'm not going to get it right, so I'm not going to say it. But yes, data quality and ingestion analysis, there are vendors focused on that space to help you with that type of data reconciliation, because that is exactly the challenge I was trying to describe earlier with apples and oranges and how do I reconcile this. Because, you know, part of the problem is things are reported differently, but they're really the same. Like if I'm capturing an issue, say, forgive me for all the AP examples, but that's the world I come from. Say my tissue didn't survive processing in the tissue processor, and I report that as an issue as did not survive processing. Somebody else puts in shorthand DNSP, right? I've got two different ways to say the same thing. When I go to report on that, it looks like I have two different issues. I don't. I have one issue that's occurring multiple times. And those are the types of things that you need to do to clean up your data before you can report on it in a meaningful way.
I would just emphasize that, again, what you mentioned earlier, which is don't put that data in Gen AI. Use AI tools, not Gen AI. A lot of people are struggling to understand the difference.
Mm.
Once you put it in there, it's gone in public domain, so all your information, if you're trying to generate reports, do not put it in ChatGPT or Copilot or Gemini.
Yeah.
It's public domain, so you're in for a lawsuit, right?
Yes, yes. All. That's a good point. Thank you.
Focus only on AI tools.
Yeah. Did, Are you familiar with any specific ones to his question?
Calling vendor names? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Me neither, because we do that and then sell it, right? That's our goal. All right. Other comments? Going once. All right. Well, hit me up. Hit my colleagues up. Thank you for coming. Thanks for being here early. Yeah.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.